All right, welcome in, KSO Show, Mason Voth, Drew Galloway here with you on a Friday, March 7th. Beautiful day. We are 1 week away from the release of MLB The Show, Drew, so get excited for
that. That's massive.
Yeah, about all we have to look forward to in life these days in Wildcat land. Oh, wait, no, we don't, because K-State's winning games again. Back-to-back wins for the Cats, and they are going to somehow miraculously, number one, try to finish the regular season above 500 at 16-15. And then on top of that, try and finish Big 12 play at 10-10. And depending on the results and how they end up working out, this team could finish as high as the 7 seed when the Big 12 tournament starts in Kansas City next week. I think they could get as low as maybe is 10, like the cap for the bottom that I think we found them to be at.
I think 10 is the cap. I think 11 is dead, but it's 10, 9, 8, or possibly 7.
Yeah. I know a lot of people are probably thinking, you guys spent 15 minutes screwing around Wednesday night after the game. You should know all the scenarios by memory now. Yeah. Hey, you're probably right, but we don't. We'll probably go through it again, but it is K-State, Iowa State on the horizon this weekend, and to do the best preview for this game that is possible, we have to bring in one of the guys that, look, I think if he had financial incentive to be in Manhattan longer, he would have much rather have been in Manhattan, Kansas than Ames, Iowa, but you know, money talks. There's also a derogatory term out there that some people use because, you know, he's gone on and met the girl of his dreams. So we now bring in lifelong Iowan Alec Bussey for the foreseeable future. And Drew's disappeared for the time being. I don't know what is going on there. There he's figured it out. But
technical difficulties.
Are they technical difficulties? If I don't know, that seems like user error. That time around. But yes, Alec Bussey joining us, the head honcho, lone wolf at Cyclone Alert right now. I know he's excited about that. I also wanted to note he's a proud Illinois alum, and he was a Coleman Hawkins fan before most of us watching this. Actually, probably all of us involved in this little show today. He'll have the Coleman Hawkins experience as somebody that enjoyed him for 4 years and got to see the ups and downs of his season at K-State. But Alec, welcome into the KSO show. You know, sorry things didn't work out for us working together, but I think we're all having a much better time in our current situation.
I'd like to think so. Yeah, it's certainly been a fun couple of years covering Iowa State. Hey, and you know, I still support Coleman Hawkins. I was able to send some messages with him yesterday, so it was a good little preview behind the scenes between Coleman and I.
Oh, well, good for you guys. I'm glad you got, you know, he shows up to your school, you just start ripping off NCAA tournaments, conference titles, shows up to our school, and it's like, the Bruce Weber 3.0 back in this thing. No, K-State's been a little bit better than that. We'll talk Cats Clones tomorrow. It's good billing for those of you that hate ESPN Plus. 12:30 tip off on CBS. So you don't have to have, you know, even cable to go find this game. You can be pretty bare bones about it, but this is K-State and Iowa State big time because of, we know what went down last year, and then K-State goes and gets the road win surprisingly at the start of February by 19 points over Iowa State. And I want to start with that, Alec, because just to get it out of the way, because of how Iowa State played around that game and since then, how much of that game was, in your eyes, an anomaly and not really indicative of, like, how much of that was just Iowa State playing bad versus did K-State actually go out and win that game, in your opinion, seeing it from the Iowa State side?
Yeah, I think at the time I would have said it was an anomaly. I think in the time since the loss to Kansas State, Iowa State has shown more instances of being an inconsistent team than certainly what TJ Altenberger or the players would have liked or what they showed up until that point. Because if you look at it, I mean, they started the season 17-2, 7-1 in the Big 12 before they had their three-game losing streak with Arizona, K-State, and KU. And I think it's worth pointing out that, like, two of those losses within that streak, you can't really ding them for too much, right? Like, Caleb Love hit a 60-foot heave at the buzzer. So like for all intents and purposes, like I can't really critique a team too much for losing that game. They had opportunities.
Could have fouled lots.
Or missed the – there's a lot of different ways they could have handled it. I don't fault them for handling it the way they did, but I don't know if I would have done what they did either, I guess, if that makes sense. I don't know if with the little amount of time that was left on the clock, if I would have risked fouling. I also may have been like, you know what, miss the second free throw intentionally after you missed the first free throw, because then – the clock starts running and there's only 2.9 seconds or 2.1 seconds left on the clock. So it makes what was a 60 foot heave a closer to a 85 or 90 foot heave. But like, then if it goes in, you lose in regulation. There's a lot of different ways you could argue this. But like, you know, that one, I think you can kind of excuse. KU has had the worst season of Bill Self's entire tenure, but he's now 38-0 on Big Monday. So I'm not really going to critique Iowa State for losing at KU on Big Monday after they lost to K-State the Saturday prior. But since then, since the start of that three-game losing streak, they're just 6-11 or 6-5, I believe, in their last 11 games. So, like, that's concerning. They've had some player unavailability because of injuries, because of illness. Obviously, they've had moments where they looked great, beating Arizona by 17, and then they've had moments where they basically get their ass kicked by Oklahoma State for an entire 40 minutes. So, you know, they've been in a hard spot. It's
hard to Gallagher Iva Arena is a tough place to go. Just ask K-State. It happens to everybody.
Yeah, not everybody wins in Gallagher Iva anymore.
It's they're in an odd spot, and I'm struggling to like diagnose, you know, how good they are at this point in the season. I think a year ago I was feeling the same way heading into the regular season finale, and Iowa State lost to K-State, and then they went to Kansas City, and they ran through the Big 12 tournament, and then they eventually got to the Sweet 16. So maybe they do that again this year. I don't know. They're in an odd spot, and T.J. Altberger seems to be more frustrated than he has been in my 2 years covering the Cyclones.
Yeah, well, so one of the big differences in this game will be Milan Momcilovic is actually going to play. He did not play the first time around. Did you think when they were going through some of those struggles that him coming back would make a significant difference, or are you surprised that they've kind of continued to maybe, like you said, they've dropped games that they shouldn't? They lost to Oklahoma State. They lost at home to BYU. And even though BYU's playing well, like these just aren't games that you think that they would lose based on how they had been playing and where, you know, they're thought of with their standing in college basketball right now. So how much of an impact will he have on this game, and how much of an impact or lack thereof has he been in turning things around for Iowa State?
Yeah, when he was out, I think it became really easy to defend Iowa State because they really have one shooter at that point that you really have to respect. At that point, it was Curtis Jones, right? And, you know, Keyshawn Gilbert, Taman Lipsey, they're shooting, you know, low to mid-30s from beyond the three-point arc, but it's on such low volume that teams aren't sticking to them like they would Milan behind the arc. So I think that that allowed defenses to pack the paint against them, which they kind of struggled with throughout his absence. Now, since he's come back, I think that he's been a pretty good player for Iowa State. He's shooting a lower percentage from three in that time, but his volume has gone up since his return, which is a good thing. TJ Osberger spoke highly of the impact that he's had. He feels like there's been a greater physicality to him, I guess you could say, since he's come back. Moving away from the ball better offensively has also been something that he's done since coming back. I think you really saw that in the Arizona game. He had two threes against U of A where he came off of a screen at the top of the key, caught and shot. He had another three in the first half against Arizona where he was on the weak side, flashed open right in front of where Tommy Lloyd was standing and drilled a three from Taman Lipsey on a quality cross-court pass to the weak side of the floor. He's given them value, but he also isn't somebody who – you know, is going to impact the game in multiple ways because he's limited, right? Like, he's not the greatest athlete. He's not someone who is often creating his own shot with his athleticism, dynamic playmaking. He's someone who can spray it from the perimeter and can certainly get to his spot and make a shot. But he's not someone who's grabbing 5, 6, 7, 8 rebounds a game, or someone who is dishing out 3 or 4 assists a game either. He's just kind of limited because of his athletic limitations, I guess, is what I would say. And, you know, he's still a valuable piece to Iowa State because of his shot making ability, which is something that this team doesn't have a ton of guys doing right now.
Tommy Lloyd, guy just loves to have big shots hit in front of him from the opposing team. He was the victim of a wild Coleman Hawkins shot a couple weeks ago in Manhattan that he seemed pretty pleased about having happen in front of him. Drew, what do you got Iowa State, K-State related to ask Mr. Bussey?
Yeah, I would ask, what's the key for Iowa State? Like, what do they not do in that first game of Manhattan that you think that they really need to do to win tomorrow afternoon?
I think what they didn't do against K-State is what they didn't do against Oklahoma State, what they didn't do against BYU for 15 consecutive minutes. And it's just show consistent effort on the defensive side. They have this weird issue this season that they have not had in the previous 3 years of TJ's tenure of allowing offensive failures or offensive miscues to affect the defensive effort that they're given. And in those stretches, they're not forcing turnovers, which limits their opportunities to get in transition, which takes away easy opportunities at the rim for their guards. It also, you know, forces them to play in a half court, which is a setting that I don't think that they're nearly as effective in as they have been at other points this season. I thought they really struggled in the half court against BYU. And when they were down 21 and they turned it on for the last 13 minutes of the second half, they were able to come back and tie that game because they were in transition so much more and they were getting fast break points and they were forcing turnovers. I also think it'll be really important for Iowa State to rebound a lot better. BYU killed them on the glass. I think it was a 52-29 advantage or something like that by the end of the game. Kebba Keita is someone who is one of the elite offensive rebounders in the entire country. He had 9 offensive rebounds against Iowa State. That's insane. And I think that it's worth pointing out that while K-State isn't statistically a very good rebounding team, David Gasan is a good rebounder. And he's someone who's going to challenge them. And I have to imagine that watching tape, they feel like we can go to the glass and we can create second chance opportunities against this Cyclone team because they've struggled on the defensive glass in recent games. And that's something that I would imagine is really frustrating to TJ Altsberger too, because that was one of their top offseason priorities was to be better on the defensive glass. And they are better than they were a year ago. And, you know, inherently the way they play defense of constantly being in rotation, guarding outside of the 3-point arc, sticking to guys there does make defensive rebounding challenging, but getting beat the way they did by BYU on the glass is certainly not something that a head coach is going to, you know, enjoy.
Yeah. Well, we got to see basically that same thing happened to K-State when they went to Provo. So BYU's turned it on lately, and they've got the right balance of a bunch of guys that just want to go out there and shoot it. And then also enough dudes that are gritty enough to go in there, mix things up, and go get it taken care of. Also, just a little aside here, 4.5 minutes left in Kansas City, K-State women down 66-60 now. They still have over half of their points came in the first quarter today. That is not a recipe for success. So we'll keep an eye on that as it gets down into crunch time. We'll get a little deeper.
My aside was going to be that Alex said that Iowa State hasn't been a very good defensive rebounding team, even though that's something that they really put an emphasis on. K-State put an emphasis on it in our 299th in defensive rebounding rate. And hey, Iowa State
can't be great at everything.
They're 108. Like, sometimes when you put an emphasis on something and it doesn't work, it ends up really biting you in the butt like it has.
Yeah, there's K-State. That's a good illustration of, for some people, like, you have an Achilles heel, and others, like, it's just one of many problems that you have, like, that contribute to being a bad team. Like, Iowa State has an Achilles heel. You can get to them by beating them off of the glass, and that's, you know, there aren't a ton of holes though in Iowa State's game. For K-State, we know they've been pretty holy all year long.
My other question would be, if you were going to single out one player that needs to have a really good game for Iowa State, who would it be?
Yeah, moving forward, the player that needs to play well for them is Keyshawn Gilbert. He's someone who I think when he is playing at his best, he can be Iowa State's best player. He was an all Big 12 second team selection a year ago. He was the Big 12. He was on the Big 12 second team a season ago, when he is playing well, he can be one of the best guards in the Big 12, but his scoring has fallen off in the last several weeks. His turnover numbers have been way too high over the last several weeks. Now those both kind of improved back to where you'd want them to be against BYU on Tuesday night. He had 13 points against BYU in like 43 minutes, I think it was, but it wasn't the most efficient scoring night. He went 4 of 13 from the floor and 1 of 5 from three. And it's rare to see him take that many three pointers. And a couple of them were just like ill-advised, poor shot selection type of instances. His turnover numbers need to come down as well. Like I said, he had just 3 turnovers on Tuesday night against BYU. But prior to that, he had instances where he turned it over 7 times. In a game that he returned from a muscle strain against Arizona, he turned it over 6 times in a win against Colorado before missing the Houston and Oklahoma State games with that muscle strain. He turned it over 5 times against Cincinnati and went over the Bearcats. He did turn it over just 4 times in the win at UCF, but he turned it over 5 times in the game prior to that against TCU. If Iowa State's going to find a way to reach its ceiling this year, it comes down to him becoming a really good guard again, because he just hasn't been really since Iowa State kind of went into that little funk of losing 3 in a row and kind of coming out of that, I guess, at the same time period. And he is their most dynamic playmaker. He's, in my opinion, their best athlete. He needs to ascend back to the level that he was at during Iowa State's trip to Maui. Is maybe too much to ask of him, because he was scoring over 20 points a game against Auburn, Dayton, and Colorado in those games. But be what you were against Marquette, or be what you were in the road game at Iowa, or something along those lines. You don't need to be, you know, 20 points a game, but be 15 and only have 2 or 3 turnovers.
I don't want to put the cart before the wagon, because good radio, TV, however you want to define this, would be saving predictions for the end. But I think how we all feel about the way the game goes on Saturday drives an important part of the conversation. And I lay this out. Iowa State people thought that they broke Jerome Tang last year, but I question if after that incident in Hilton, if that broke Iowa State, because K-State has won 2 of the last 3. And congratulations, you won in Kansas City. And nobody cares about the conference tournament as a whole until like you've won it, or like you're just, you know, hey, win this one, let's keep
having the guy fun. Whose favorite thing every year is
yeah tournament. But the thing is, I don't care who's playing. Would I prefer that K-State play for as long as possible? Yeah, absolutely. But like, winning it does not mean a thing to me, and I think most, you know, it doesn't. I mean, yeah, if you have the choice of, hey, win it or not, you'd rather win it, but it's not a huge deal. But
I just find the irony funny there of you saying that the conference tournaments don't matter that much, yet it's your favorite week of the entire basketball season.
I like watching basketball. You know, you could have white and gray jerseys on, and I don't care what the name on the front is. Just put some basketball in front of me. Also, I've only been to semifinal Friday 1 time in the history of the Big 12 tournament. So that's not, you know, I don't stick around for that. Namely, because I don't have to work for that. And then, you know, it's not fun to just wait around all day and watch 2 teams you don't care about play with only 2 games going on. But K-State last year, Iowa State came to Bramlage and had the opportunity to still grab a share of the Big 12 regular season title. All they needed was KU to beat Houston, which, again, Houston better than everybody in the Big 12, but not unfathomable that KU could maybe beat them. And Iowa State came out
30.
Yeah, well, you know, but Iowa State came out flat. That game had not started yet. That game started after this one. Iowa State
came
out.
Don't let facts get in the way.
I'm just pointing it out. They lost by 30.
Yeah, hey, I'm telling you. But, you know, if I went into something and it's like, hey, you still have a chance, even though it's a slim chance, I'd be working my butt off, and it didn't work out for Iowa State. Then, obviously, you know, congrats, less than a week later, day of rest. K-State had a battle with Texas the night before. And then K-State goes to Ames and gets that win by 19. While I don't think, you know, those are indicative of necessarily K-State versus Iowa State exactly, but they are just kind of fascinating to see. With everything that's played into these two teams, and I think really these two staffs now, it's more about the staffs than even just how you look at these teams as opponents and rivals, as Kennedy Taylor just gave K-State the go-ahead bucket there with less than 2 minutes left. How important is this game to Iowa State, and how do you think this plays out coming off the fact that they've lost two in a row? They have that 19-point loss to K-State and Hilton earlier this year. Like, where do you see tomorrow playing out?
I think they'll respond in a similar way they did after losing to Oklahoma State. And the way they did that was a 17-point win over Arizona. Just with the intent that they play with, the energy that they play with, the purpose that they attack their opponent with, I think all of those things are going to be at a high level against K-State. Now, I don't know if that necessarily means that they're going to beat them by 17 because they're going to be on the road. It's K-State senior day. You know, that's going to mean something to, you know, guys like David Gasson, guys like Max Jones, who was given an opportunity to play at the high major level by Kansas State. It's going to mean a lot. Like, senior day is always important to kids and a coaching staff.
It doesn't mean anything to Coleman Hawkins.
I was just naming a few seniors. Mm. I'm not saying it does or if it doesn't. I'm sure it does. It's going to be his last college basketball home game unless he finds a way to get another season of eligibility.
Hey, one more year. Sue him, Coleman. Sue him.
I'm sure one he can play in some grounds. Like Cooper Flagg. One more year, baby.
Run yeah.
No, I think they'll come out and they'll play hard and they'll have good intent. I just struggle. I don't question if they're going to do that because the last time they were coming off of an instance where they took a frustrating loss where they played poorly, they played really well against Arizona. I expect them to play well. What I struggle with is, are they going to be able to do it again and again and again and again, where you have to do it in that situation at this time of the year if you want to keep playing? Like, I wouldn't be shocked if they beat K-State by 12 and then go to Kansas City and lose their first round game or their first game. I also wouldn't be shocked if they go to Kansas City and they play to Saturday night and they cut down nets in Kansas City again. Like, it's just really hard to predict this team because of the way they've played over the last 5-6 weeks.
Yeah, I get that. I think K-State's in such a rut right now, shooting the ball for the most part, and we'll see. Maybe Coleman Hawkins came back against Cincinnati and led the way to helping them kind of get that win. But they're not shooting as well. That was one of the things they did really well in Ames. I would just think, and this is where I'm trying to gauge from you, like how broken is Iowa State to think that this team that at one point in the season, I thought that they were the second best team in the country. Like, I thought, like, people needed to come to grips with the fact that they might be a real national championship contender. I thought they were going to cruise through the Big 12. Like, how broken are they now and to where they could come off of, you know, this loss that they just suffered to BYU, and they should have all the motivation in the world to get back at K-State. But, like, is there a real scenario where you see them coming out flat or struggling and K-State can actually win this game? Because that's, to me right now, from my standpoint, I would think of this as a game where K-State can do as much as they want. I just think Iowa State, they're obviously the better team. I think they're going to come in and be able to will themselves to get this win.
That's what I think is going to happen. I mean, I agree with you, Mason. Like, that's how I see it playing out. I just don't know if it necessarily means that they're going to win by 15 or 20 points. Yeah. Now, they could also dominate K-State for the first 35 minutes of the game like they have a lot of other teams this year. I mean, they haven't played very many close games. They're 2-4 this year in close games. And I think that's maybe another minor concern that I have about this group, is they just haven't played a ton of games that have been decided by a narrow margin because they've beaten the crap out of a lot of teams throughout the year. But then they've also had instances where, you know, they've won games by more than 10 points or whatever because they had a late comeback. Like, that's what happened in their win at Iowa. That's what happened in their win at Colorado. They won each of those games by, I think, 9 or 10 points. So I don't think those are necessarily described as quote unquote close games from a metrics perspective, but they were close comeback type of games and in a difficult setting for each of those. I do think that they'll play well. I think they're going to play hard. Last year throughout the first 3 months of this season, it was really easy for me to just throw a lot of blind faith to what Iowa State was going to bring every night because it was exactly the same every single night. And it became really easy to predict what games are going to be because they were the same all the time for the last 2 years. And since that Caleb Love shot went in, they haven't been that team. I remember after they lost to Arizona, they returned home. And Keyshawn Gilbert was asked about, you know, the response from that moment in that team. And now he said, you know, that can break a team. He felt like that it was going to bring them together. And he said it felt like they had galvanized themselves from it. But then they proceeded to lose two in a row, including the K-State game that no one thought they were going to lose. And then they lost to KU by 17 in a game that they were largely uncompetitive in. Now, granted, Milan Momcilovic wasn't available in those three games, but you do wonder if like their confidence took a big hit because of that. But then you feel like you can't say that because they lost by 9 on the road at Houston without two of their three best players.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they got that lead down to single digits, like 2 or 3 points on multiple occasions in the second half. Like they're just weird. Like they're hard to predict. Like they went from being one of the most consistently hard playing effort based teams that you knew what you were going to get on each side of the floor for the first, you know, 2-3 months of the season to now, I don't know what I'm going to get within a game because they were outscored 44-19 for about 15 consecutive minutes against BYU on Tuesday night. And then they overcome a 21 point deficit in the last 13 minutes and 15 seconds of the game to force overtime.
Yeah. All right. We're going to pause on the Iowa State talk. Cause I want Drew to then tell us what he thinks, but we got a K-State. Hey, sorry that women's basketball matters in Manhattan, Alec, but this is a women's basketball podcast. Occasionally K-State women with the ball down 2. Poindexter got a great look from 3. It never looked like it was going in though. No. This is going to turn out great. Jump ball. West Virginia is going to get to keep it up too. So JJ Quinterly, once again, many teams in the Big 12 have not had an answer for her, and it seems like she might victimize K-State one more time like she did a couple of weeks ago on that Monday afternoon where the Big 12 just screwed K-State scheduling-wise. What are you doing there, you know? Making the Cats travel and play an afternoon game on a Monday? That's nuts. So we'll get into that. But they're in a timeout right now, so you'll get our live reaction. And you're going to be driving around tomorrow on your way to the game thinking, didn't this happen yesterday? It did, but you can listen to either excitement or sorrow here. Drew, during this timeout, tell us, how do you see this game playing out tomorrow? Because it seems like Alec and I have the same thought of, I don't see how Iowa State loses this game based off of the circumstances.
Yeah, I don't see how Iowa State loses this game, but I think that it's going to be pretty close. Like I could see this game being in that like 4.5 range that the spread is at right now. Like it could go.
I was gonna say that's a great call by you.
Way to look at Ken Ponder.
Like it could definitely be pretty close. And like I'm just like looking at this and it's hard to predict because I mean, Alec talking about how inconsistent Iowa State is game to game. I mean, K-State is exactly that as well. And you don't really know what it's going to look like from half to half, game to game, because K-State looked dead in the water against Cincinnati on Wednesday night, and then Coleman Hawkins just yells at everybody, and they start to play with energy. So, I don't know. I think that it'll be a close game, but Iowa State probably comes out on top. It's hard to not pick them, because they are the much better and even more consistent team. But it also wouldn't be shocking to see K-State pull it off with how K-State has played against ranked teams in Manhattan.
True. Yeah, if you got a number by your name and you're coming to Manhattan, watch out, losers. We got another timeout taken by West Virginia now, 17 seconds left. K-State did a pretty good job defensively there. They just couldn't get to the ball in time. And then they showed a highlight package of J.J. Quinterly just relentlessly using her forearm to shove off of people. And get baskets. So that's frustrating to see. Alec, I want to ask you about Coleman Hawkins. And as an outsider this year to the Coleman Hawkins experience, after 4 years of rooting for him at Illinois, what do you make of really that situation at large? Like how he's played, how he's handled it, what his expectations were, like everything that you look at it as somebody that has probably a lot of love for Coleman Hawkins but not, you know, having him on your team anymore and seeing him for somebody else and maybe how a different fan base perceived him.
How do you feel like he has been perceived?
I think it's been pretty up and down. I think over the last month and a half, it's turned into a majority of people have come around to like, this guy's busted his butt for everybody, and like he should be respected and given his flowers. Like he's tried to keep this thing together. But I also think that there are still going to be a lot of people with the what ifs. And I think there's a lot of people that are so one-sided on it. They don't want to have the nuanced conversation of like the people that are on in the camp of Coleman Hawkins. Like he's done a lot to keep this team together. He's done this. Nobody should talk bad about him. We do know that he wasn't fully bought in when he first got to K-State, which is totally understandable because wildly different environment that he was walking into being coached by Jerome Tang than Brad Underwood. So I understand why that would be something that would take some getting used to. And like, yes, he got paid a lot of money and he's doing the exact same thing that he did as West Virginia makes two free throws. So they're up four now. He's getting paid essentially to do the exact same thing. Like he hasn't changed as a player, but his shooting has gone down in every area. And, you know, when K-State gave him that money, it wasn't to be the same player he was at Illinois. The thought was, hey, you're going to come in and you're going to be able to at least improve upon that a little bit and turn into, you know, more of a true number one. Whereas he never had to be a number one at Illinois. And like, and so he's a great piece to not have as your number one, but you thought there's enough of a skill set here where he should be able to up it. And that's where I think, you know, end of the day, he's done as much as he can to try and keep this thing together. He's meant a lot. He's the key to K-State winning games, but too early on, he just wasn't a factor for him. And you didn't get out of Coleman Hawkins what you thought you were getting when you got him, but that's not necessarily his fault. That's where it comes back to Jerome Tang and his staff to where, you know, if a guy is one type of player for 4 years, then maybe you should realize that he's probably not going to be somebody different in that fifth year.
Yeah, I would say that, like, if K-State fans expected him to come in and be, like, a Big 12 player of the year candidate or an All-Big 12 first-team selection, that those expectations were probably a little bit out of alignment. Because like you said, I mean, he had been at Illinois for 4 years and he had never been better than Illinois' third best player on any of those teams. I mean, he was a Big Ten honorable mention, I think, in 23-24, or maybe an All Big Ten third team selection. That might sound more right. He's not someone who I feel like, you know, you can expect to be your number one, but then when, you know, Shams is breaking his commitment and mentioning a $2 million NIL deal for him to go to K-State. Like, that's a natural connotation that a lot of fans are probably going to have. I understand why that would exist, and I don't necessarily blame fans for that. What I would be critical of is choosing to spend $2 million on a player that was never better than a third-team all-conference selection, like, and that was never better than, you know, his team's third best player. Now, granted, he played on some really good Illinois teams that had, you know, all Americans and all Big Ten first team selections throughout his career there. Like he played with Iudasumu and Kofi Coburn throughout the first two or three years of his career. He played with Terrence Shannon and Marcus Damask last year. He played with Matt Meyer in 22-23, who was an all Big Ten selection as well. But I just don't think that spending $2 million on one individual player in the portal is generally ever going to be an advisable thing. And now maybe that'll change as we move to the revenue share era where you're going to have more money total for more rosters. So like the overall income for an individual player is going to go up. So if you were making $750,000 in the old model, maybe that goes up closer to $1 million now. If you kind of get what I'm saying there, I think that I understand the natural frustration of him shooting below 40% from the field, his three-point numbers kind of regressing back down closer to what they were in the first three years of his career at Illinois. I think a lot of those frustrations are valid, and I understand them. I also think that, you know, if you saw the big price that he was playing with at Cincinnati, it's hard to say he quit on a team that's chances of going to the NCAA tournament are hanging by a thread. I mean, the only way K-State gets the NCAA tournament is winning in Kansas City.
Hey, so, weak bubble. It's a weak bubble.
It's true. They got on there. They got on the bubble with those six straight wins. But he didn't have to come back and play those games, right? Like, I mean, I know that he's dealt with knee tendonitis throughout the last couple of years. I don't know how serious his injury was this time around, but that knee brace indicates that it was not just some minor knee sprain that went away. So I think that he does deserve credit for that, as being a fifth year kid who came back to school when he maybe could have tried to find a two-way in the NBA. Now, I would have advised him to come back to school too for the type of money that he was able to command from K-State. But I don't know. I told you when he committed to K-State that there was going to be very mixed feelings about him amongst the fan base, because there's Illinois fans who love Coleman Hawkins and think Coleman Hawkins was a great player at Illinois. And then there's others who get frustrated by the pump fake threes, the bad turnovers, the complaining at officials when he's called for a foul or a foul isn't whistled on him when he's going to the rim, things like that annoyed fans at the same time. But I don't know. I'm of the belief he's a good college player. I just don't think he was a great college player at any point in his career. And I think that's a fair way to describe him. He was impactful to winning on you know, three really good Illinois teams, really two.
Yeah. He's the kind of player that you want on a good team, because I think he can make him great. But if you just have a team, he can't turn you into a good enough team, because you need everybody else to step up. And that's where for K-State, they had everybody else stepping up during that stretch. He was obviously playing great. And you saw how necessary he was to what they need to do to win, because when he was out, they looked lost offensively.
Yeah, that's where I think that a lot of like Coleman Hawkins, like a lot of the stuff that you see with him is like not stat related on how he really impacts this team, because they are so lost without him. And to Alex's point about the big knee brace during the senior media day availability, which by the way, Spencer Bain was available to the media today. Coleman Hawkins said that he isn't playing with a fractured tibia. So there you go. And I think that he really deserves something for playing with it.
Alec didn't want to mention Spencer Bain when he was listening off K-State seniors.
I didn't know that name, to be honest with you.
How do you not know the walk-on from? How do you not know about the K-State walk-on that has played in like three games?
Is he from Manhattan? Is he a future preacher?
No, I don't know what his plans are moving forward. We don't know a lot about him. I just know that he never wears his warm up on the bench. So
he's maybe, always ready.
He's going to confuse somebody. He stole Cam Carter's number. I know that. So that's about the backstory on Spencer Bain. Happy Senior Day, Spencer. Live it up tomorrow. It's going to be complicated, and it's not even at the beginning of the year. Coleman definitely played into it at parts of. Like it being complicated because of him, but
think about the LSU game, the end.
Well,
of the game.
Yeah, that, and there's just so many other things, and like you said, you know, he can be the complaining to officials. He's very online. Like there are enough things where you look at and say maybe your focus could be directed somewhere else. But when once he got into it, I think he locked in, and I think he did buy in, and then he could try to lead everybody elsewhere. The biggest issue for this team is going to be the fact that I think for the first month of the season or more, 2 months of the season, essentially the two guys that needed to be your two best players, and when you were winning games were your two best players, Doug McDaniel and Coleman Hawkins, they weren't all the way in yet. And that's ultimately going to be the undoing of this team, because even the team that has lost games to BYU and Utah and UCF, I think if you get that level of a team playing against, you know, Liberty or whoever early in Wichita State, like you win those games. And that's great. Where K-State, if they just LSU. Didn't lose like two or three of those games, they probably are really a bubble team right now still and have a legitimate chance. But they just lost too many stupid games, and it's because – they weren't on the same page. And, you know, partway through the year, they got on the same page. But Coleman Hawkins' legacy will be complicated more so because of the decision makers that run the program than he himself. And I think a lot of people, for the most part, as they should give him a lot of credit and think pretty strongly about how he tried to lead this team. And like Drew said, playing through a fractured tibia for K-State at the end when it really doesn't matter. Because he was huge in their win against Cincinnati. They needed him. They don't win that game without him. And they certainly wouldn't have a chance on Saturday without him against Iowa State. So Yeah, he deserves his props and everything there. Anything else you want to throw in here before we kick you out of here? And Drew and I once again just aimlessly talk about Big 12 championship scenarios before we end the show today.
Yeah, where are y'all going in Kansas City? Should we meet up for
T-Mobile Center?
For T-Mobile pets? Center and the college basketball.
I don't really.
Drew, are you making really way up from Atlanta? Off.
He's in Manhattan.
No, I'm in Manhattan. We're chilling.
Oh, you haven't moved yet?
He's living life free up there right now. He's living large. So nice. Well, we'll be there. Well, I really, you know, like I said, no nights off for me. So I'll be there constantly. Unless the good news is
the pun intended there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I know what I'm doing. I'm a no nights off type of guy. The good news is for K-State and really me is I don't think they can play in that 11 o'clock game anymore unless something really weird happened that I haven't even theorized. So I'll get there after the game has started at 11:30 on Tuesday and then be there rocking and rolling. Really, we're just kind of hoping that K-State doesn't play as a 9 seed because I don't know, that creates a little bit of a difficult path. Because we're all about dreaming here, Alec. This team, you know, they played six straight really good games at one point. What else they
hoping
have?
Seven.
Yep, praying for seven.
What is your guys' opinion on the court?
It's ugly. Horrible. But I'm not going to write any letters to Brett to be like, get this out of here. I'm not going to not show up or whatever. It's just ugly. But, you know, there are certain things you put up with ugly things in life and move on. It doesn't need to be a big deal, but so we're just, you know, watching CK State. For the people that are interested, we'll just do this with Alec here, knock it out real quick. Likely scenarios on Saturday: if K-State loses to Iowa State, then K-State probably ends up as the 10. I think, and that's, you know, the KU Arizona game is going to play some significant marks in this because of KU being either 10-10 or 11-9 in conference play. So if K-State loses and all the results that you would assume happen do, K-State will be fine. They won't have to play in those earlier games. But things could get real wonky if Colorado beats TCU. That could jostle K-State around in kind of a good way. That's the scenario where K-State, you would need KU to lose and TCU to lose, and K-State would be able to get that 7 seed and a bye in the bottom half of the bracket, which, again, is going to be much friendlier because it won't include BYU, Iowa State, or Houston. So that's what you're looking for. I know that there are still a few scenarios that would put K-State into that 9 game that I saw earlier, but for the most part, I think the most likely outcome is that they're going to end up as probably the 10. Or, you know, as we've talked about, the 8 or the 7. So
do you want to throw up the graphic that you made? Has Alex seen that movie yet?
Oh yeah. You ever seen the movie Mr. 3000?
Yeah, that's the baseball movie, right?
With Bernie Mac.
Yeah, Bernie
Mac. Yeah. So you know the premise of Mr. 3000 then, right? Like the old guy, he comes back.
Yeah, trying to get 3,000 hits.
Well, yeah, and like, but then he decides, hey, it's better to be like a good teammate, and these guys are just cool being a bunch of losers in the bottom of the NL Central. Like, let's try and finish in 4th, not 6th, in the Central. You know, that kind of thing.
6-team Central.
Yeah, so we back a couple of months ago. That's a month. Drew and I started having this conversation about the race to 8, and I told Drew that K-State needs to try – Coleman Hawkins, he's a Mr. 3000 this, where the team, yeah, you're not going to win the league. You're probably not getting into the NCAA tournament, but you at least need something to fight for, and you need to go and try Mr. 3000. And I thought it was the right example. So we've got a little Mr. 3000 example there for you. And I think it's a great comparison because Coleman Hawkins, old guy, has been around, you know, a lot of winning, been a good basketball player. Now he's got to try and get this ragtag bunch to hop on with him and lead them to a not so crappy finish, even though it won't be what people would have still liked, you know, like winning your division. So Coleman Hawkins, Mr. 3000, Mr. 8 seed. So
he's putting the eye back in team, it says at the bottom.
Yeah, well, I didn't edit anything other than his face and replacing Bernie Mac's name with his name. So don't read into anything down there.
You know, it's funny. I like the bottom line too. Big League, Big 12, you know, Big League.
Yep.
Big Mouth, Coleman Hawkins, known for talking a little
crap. It's really on brand, I would say.
Big time. I guess it is. I love this.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to get really close there to see.
Yeah, man, how old are you? Yeah, well, there you go.
That's the ballpark in Arlington is the background.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. It's obviously not Miller Park, but it.
Because that movie is shot in Miller Park, right?
Yeah, they did some things in there. I don't know how much of the game scenes and everything, how much access, but you know, some of those, like the retirement ceremony and everything. But yeah, so Drew still hasn't seen it.
It's not that good of a movie, Drew.
That's
because
not
I'm not paying $3.99 on Google Play, which I didn't know still existed.
All right. Well, Tuesday night after K-State wins. K-State's not playing Tuesday night because they're going to be the 7 seed. So Tuesday night, I will buy it for us and we'll watch it in the hotel, Drew.
If I had told you guys that K-State was going to be the 7 seed in the Big 12 tournament and they were going to miss the NCAA tournament, what would you have said?
I would have said there's no way that's possible. I would have said
you were the craziest person to ever exist.
Yeah, if you
7 seed is still unlikely, correct?
Not really. All that K-State needs to happen in that scenario is they need to beat Iowa State and they need Colorado to beat TCU.
That seems fairly unlikely.
And they need KU to lose to Arizona. So those are the three things that you need to have happen.
Yeah, that seems fairly unlikely.
Yeah, well, no, but it's not far-fetched, you know, because TCU.
Colorado beating TCU is pretty fair-fetched. They have one lead.
They beat Baylor. They've got more than that.
They beat UCF and they beat Baylor.
Respect on Tad's name.
But yeah, so it is more likely that K-State probably ends up as the 10 right now. But even then, I would have said if you finish top 10 in the Big 12, like 90% of the top 10 is going to be in the NCAA tournament. You're looking at a scenario right now where the top 10 in the Big 12, at least two of them don't play in the NCAA tournament, TCU and K-State. And then you could even like start to make the case of Baylor's going to get in, but should they get in, you know, like one of those types of deals. So it is crazy. I would have thought it's not possible because I thought this K-State team was going to be way better than that. So
that's about where I thought that they were going to finish around.
But this is really with how this is could end up. Mason and I are just going to look like we are like geniuses for saying that if K-State would have been good, that they could have been a like Big 12 title contention, like second, third, fourth, because they still might get to 10 Big 12 wins, even being terrible.
It's true. And not to mention that the losses that they suffered that really killed them were wins. Like they should have been wins. Like, They should have beaten O State, they lost a close one to Tech at home. They were up 12 at Baylor in the second half. Like they could have won a lot of those games. Not KU.
Arizona State had no business being a loss either.
Yeah.
I mean, Drew, I don't know if I would have said if they had been in won those games that they would be in Big 12 title contention because I don't see them winning 15, 16 league games.
No, so at the beginning of the year, we talked about how the schedule set up for K-State, like who you dodge, who you only played once, like how some of the games worked out. And so what I'm like looking back now, they navigated the toughest part of their schedule
with a 6-0 record.
With a 6-0 record. Or you could really stretch that and say 6-4 because they played Houston, Texas Tech, KU, and Baylor before.
Yeah, those should be included.
So they went 6-4, but like if I had told you then that K-State's losses in Big 12 play outside of those came to TCU, Oklahoma State, Utah, Arizona State, and UCF, like that's just you would have gone, no, if you beat some of those other teams, you should do that. But that's just the kind of year it's been in Manhattan. So we'll see what it looks like tomorrow as K-State tries to finish the Big 12 regular season 500. They face Iowa State at 12:30 on CBS. Thanks to Alec for joining us.
Before I leave, who is your Big 12 tournament pick?
For what?
For the conference tournament. Both of you guys.
Oh, who would I guess? The only team that it matters to that they win it every year. Iowa State's going to win it, Alec. Congrats on
that's
being
your pick. That's a bold pick, man.
They're going to do it. Because no one seed other than Kansas has ever won the Big 12 tournament. So Houston, not happening. Plus, Kelvin's smart enough to know it doesn't mean anything for them.
I'm going to go BYU. They're playing the second best because I still think Tech is.
Yeah, I wouldn't pick really, either really of those well. Teams.
Who are you picking? You picking KU? You think the Hawks get it figured out?
Certainly not picking KU. They're
He's
awful. I hate watching them.
He is picking the Cats.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna shock you with this. I think I'm gonna pick Tech.
Oh
no, I like that pick.
I think pick the right bottom part of the bracket is more favorable for Tech. Them. I would pick when you guys said he's gonna pick the Cats. I should have said Arizona.
Hey. You want me to tell you the most likely scenario that ends up playing out in the conference tournament here? Let's just run this little simulation. K-State, 10 seed, plays 15 seeded Arizona State. They win. They play West Virginia or Baylor. Losers. Okay. So then they win that one. Texas Tech should have beat them in Manhattan, only lost by 4 points. Texas Tech did suck at that point, but different team now. Who cares? Home crowd advantage, the third day of the Big 12 tournament. There's going to be some buzz. You win. Arizona, known fraud right now. Arizona, you already beat them. You're going to beat them again. Caleb Love's going to go 2 for 25 shooting in that game. And then there you go. You find yourself in the Big 12 championship game against hopefully not Iowa State or Houston, but you could handle somebody else. Cause if it's BYU, they play BYU, boom, BYU due to shoot 10% from three. K-State doesn't let BYU grab 74 offensive rebounds in the game. They hang on NCAA tournament. So start booking your tickets to whatever, to Dayton, Ohio right now, Cats fans.
No, they wouldn't be going to Dayton if they win the Big 12 tournament.
You think they would? You don't think that they would be an 11? You think they'd be better than an 11 seed if they won the Big 12 tournament?
I don't think that they can be because the play-in, it's only 6 teams or the AQs that have to go to Dayton.
No, that's just because that's all the only thing that's ever happened there.
I think that it has to be an at-large.
Well, okay, let's look at
It would seem right. If it would have to be an at-large for the 11 seed games, because obviously it's a play-in game, but I think the logic that Drew has isn't necessarily factual because the 16 seeds.
So I'm looking here because
the 16 seeds shouldn't have to be in a play-in either, but they have to because that's the only way that they're going to win.
We got a way to figure this out. In 2021, I think you might be right, Drew, because a little old team called Oregon State. They went on a little run themselves and got hot and saved Wayne Tinkle's job. Actually, they didn't suck that year, I guess. They sucked the year after, so I shouldn't throw them under the bus.
Colorado, the COVID season, and Georgetown, the COVID season, didn't have to play in the play-in, and they were horrible.
Okay,
horrible.
And they were terrible. What seed did Georgetown end up getting then?
12.
Okay, yeah, and that's what Oregon State got. So,
yeah, that Georgetown team's a good example.
That seems wrong to me that they'd be like, hey, you guys have to go play in the first four because you won your conference tournament to the 16s. But then, like, we're not ever going to do it to one of the, bigger conference schools.
It's because the 16s do it because it's the only way that a lot of those schools are going to ever win an NCAA tournament.
Well, I know, and I'm fine with that. Like that, I like the 16s getting that opportunity in the first four. I think that's how it should be. Give them a chance to actually win a game. But like, that's just strange to me. I guess what? So in theory, we'd be looking at if K-State did that, they would be, they'd be 20-16, and they would end up having 14 wins against Big 12 teams. On their resume,
that's probably not a team that goes to Dayton.
So
no,
because you'd have some impressive wins at that point.
Also, would be very K-State in that scenario to lose the Big 12 championship game.
Oh boy, yeah, that would be. There's a lot of painful losses that K-State fans have suffered in previous years. Would that be the most like not from the standpoint of really what was at stake there? but just like from the emotional investment that that would take, where would that rank, Drew? You know, in, let's just in terms of basketball, because I have four easy off the top of my head, the most painful losses in K-State basketball over the last, let's just go back 15 years.
So FAU, the 2010 team. Butler.
Nope. I'm not even, well, yes, those are included, I guess.
FAU, I was say, how would those not be included in this?
I was talking before I was thinking. I thought he was going elsewhere. So yeah, you go FAU, Butler, Loyola, obviously the Elite Eights. I would throw the Bruce's last year, the Nigel Pack nuclear game against KU, only for Ochai Agbaji to go even more nuclear in the final few minutes.
See, I didn't even have that. I didn't even have that as a loss that was up there for me. I would even throw in losing to UC Irvine hurt a lot.
See, that was just one where at that stage, you know, Dean Wade was out. I just kind of resigned to it. I kind of had accepted it at that point. But yeah, that's fair. You know, you win the Big 12. And the other thing that sucked about that was K-State won the Big 12 and they had to watch Texas Tech, who also won the Big 12, go play in overtime of the national championship game. And you're like, that should have been us.
And should have won.
Yeah.
True. I would say it would be number five for me behind the Elite Eight losses and then to UC Irvine.
Okay. I'm trying to think where I would. Well, I think you have to look at it and say, number one, I think it still has to be that Butler loss if we're numbering them, because that was probably the best caliber of team. And then you think about what went on in that, like you lose to Butler and they were inches away from beating Duke for the national championship. Like Jacob Pullen and Denny Clemente were that good and they have had enough of a supporting cast. They could have done it. Number two would be FAU, because again, that team also good. You probably were not going to beat UConn if you got there. But that team was really good, really exciting. And it just kind of sucks too, because FAU and Loyola, like Butler had legitimate guys on their team that went on to play in the NBA. And you're like, oh, I accept those are actually good guys, good players. It's kind of tough to stomach the FAU and Loyola thing. We'll put Loyola there, you know, whatever. I would actually, I'd put it fourth. I'd put it ahead of any of those others, that like the KU game or the loss there. But that would be a top five painful loss in K-State history if it happened. It probably doesn't. It really is unlikely to happen, but I don't know. It's fun to think about hypotheticals. It's, again, really where we've had to live this season with K-State basketball is what if this happened? We only had a six-game stretch where we got to talk about this did happen. So, Alec, thanks for joining us. We'll see you in Manhattan tomorrow or today if you're listening on your way to the game or whatever it may be. Hopefully we killed an hour of your drive. And then, that'll do it for us here. K-State women did end up losing, so they're done. They're going to need some help, some other teams to be losers in their conference tournaments very soon so they can hang on to their top 16 status. And if they can host the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament. So we'll see how that plays out next weekend for the K-State women, but their season comes to an end.
Probably rooting for the Clones now and the women's to beat Baylor.
Wow. Look at that. Full circle. Two rivals coming together to support each other. All right, we'll get out of here, and everybody enjoy the rest of your Friday. Cats Clones tomorrow, 12:30 in Bramlage, last home game of the season for the K-State men. And then it's time to start the best week of the year, Big 12 Tournament Week in Kansas City. Four games over the course of
three days. But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. I don't care who wins it.
It's the best week, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, because guess what? It doesn't matter to me if the first game that I watch is Oklahoma State-Cincinnati, or if it's, you know, Kansas and Arizona. I just want to watch a bunch of basketball, you know? But hey, that's the Hutch guy in me showing out. JUCO tournament came through every year. It's fun to just go sit and watch ball. So sorry that I like it more than you guys, and that I'd rather be watching cricket or something.
I'm just pointing out the inconsistencies in your
it's not an inconsistency. I just, you know, I can I I don't I don't I color of skin, color of jersey, I don't see it. Doesn't matter to me, Alec. So I'm sorry that you guys live in a world that is so, you know, whatever. Not me. I support everybody. So, finding out a lot about these people that I talked to today. We're out of here. See ya.